Welcome to Visionary Doc, where ambition meets purpose and self-discovery fuels transformation. Are you chasing success but feeling unfulfilled? Delve into the joys and jolts of high-achieving lives, and together, let's redefine ambition. It's time to strip away the pathological and embrace the potential. Join host Dr. Shez as we explore what it means to be a visionary of your own life.
I like to talk about mindset and things like that. So that's what we're going to talk about. I'm Dr. Shez, one of the co-hosts, and I am so excited to talk to Dr. Dagny Zhu Luong. She is a board-certified ophthalmologist, and she is the owner of her own private practice and one of the rising stars in our field. Dr. Zhu, so glad to have you.
Hey, thanks for the very nice intro. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. We already kind of started to talk about stuff. So anything you want to hit on? What do you want to talk about? How was your day?
Oh, I've never had that before, like turning the tables. I mean, I know we share a lot of similarities. I know we're going to touch upon a lot of cool stories going about kind of immigrant, right? So
yeah, well, actually, yeah. So that reminds me. So we were talking about this, right? This, I showed you my degrees and you're like, oh, I have them at my office, which is such a big difference between kind of, right? You have kind of a distinct area of your life that you assign your identity as an ophthalmologist, and you kind of keep that in a way separate from the other parts of you. I assume all those things, I don't know, but that's kind of where I was, where I feel like our conversation was going. And for me, that has been a bit of a struggle. So why don't you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I mean, I was just commenting on all the nice board certifications and awards that you have on your wall there. And I assumed you were in your office, but that's your home. And then I was saying, for me, all that stuff is in my clinic where patients can see, you know, my accolades and my training. And it's more of a validation for me in that setting where I feel like I need to prove myself more to my patients who don't know this young, you know, minority woman physician, that yes, I have gone through this much training, I know my stuff, and you can feel comfortable having surgery with me. So it's definitely a barrier, I think, that a lot of us younger surgeons, especially women and those of color, you know, as we're going into practice, it's a completely new environment, and we feel like we have to prove ourselves to our patients. And you don't really realize that until you come out into the real world. Certainly when I, you know, bought my practice and I had to put my identity out there, I was lost. I was at a loss. I didn't know how to do it. You know, how do I convince people that I was worthy of a physician or of being their provider? So definitely a lot of imposter syndrome those first 5 years, and even still now.
Yeah, and there's so much there to unpack, right? But there's this concept of worthiness and just feeling like you have a sense of worth regardless of what it is that you've achieved or your ability to achieve anything, right? And I feel like as immigrants, I don't know, you know, the message you got, the message I got was like, I gotta accomplish, I have to achieve if I'm gonna have any worth, right? So I grew up in a very performance-based value system. And I don't know, it's just challenging to really like have, you know, be secure in who you are and still like be able to accomplish goals and not let it like define everything about you, right? So right. How did you navigate that balance?
I mean, for us, I think so many of us immigrants are just naturally successful because we're just motivated because of where we come from. So it's like my mom came here, I mean, with my dad when I was 3 from China, they were working class. And I just remember us when I was 3 years old, I was already home alone because my parents were working, you know, waitressing restaurants 24/7, trying to make a living and trying to have my dad finishing his graduate degree. And so I just remember that, you know, I didn't get a lot of my parents growing up, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, I focus on my education so that I could be able to provide for my family and not have to put my children through that same situation. And I know my husband, you know, I met him at Harvard actually, and we bonded right away because we were like, oh my gosh, we're both first generation immigrants. And he was a refugee from Vietnam, like a very similar story, you know, and he always grew up with a chip on his shoulder where, you know, his mom was working nail salons, his dad worked at assembly line, and he was always like, oh, you know, this is so embarrassing. You know, I can't have my friends come over. I need to prove myself one day, you know? And so we bonded over those values right away. And it was a little bit different about how we both got to Harvard. Like, I was always very studious. Like, I didn't know what else to do. I was just pretty good at, you know, doing exams and doing homework. Like, I was just naturally very studious. Whereas my husband, he's like the opposite. He's like, didn't like studying, but like so street smart. Like, the guy is very savvy, business savvy. He was like the leader of all these clubs. He got a lot of scholarships just because of leadership. And we both ended up at Harvard. And it's just like these two different immigrant pathways, you know, that brought us together. And then we just connected right away because of our values and how we wanted to, you know, give our parents a better life because of what they sacrificed for us.
And your children, right? You want to give your children a better life and a different life.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And so I feel like for us, at least, a lot of our motivation to like go into healthcare, my husband is an orthodontist, you know, to have our own practice. A lot of that just comes from like the need to survive. But for our kids, I feel like do what interests you, you know, like take time to explore your passions. And it's nice that we're able to create that environment for him where he doesn't need to feel that same pressure as we did, at least financially, to succeed, right? And do well for the future. We feel like they can take more of their.
Yeah, no, absolutely, 100%. And how are you offering that to yourself? If at all, right? Like, how are you kind of, you know, do you still feel like you're in survival, kind of that survival mindset?
No. Yeah, I feel like we're very lucky to be at a point where we finally feel like we're stable. I feel like we've achieved the American dream. You know, my mom bought a house when I was in high school with like a white picket fence. You know, I was able to go to college, you know, paid off all my loans. I'm a practice owner now. I have a job that I love. And now I feel like I can take the opportunity to do things that I really enjoy and have passions for. So I really love, you know, not only being a surgeon, but being able to work with industry and like on a lot of cool startups, doing a lot of different technology. So my husband, he is also a dual degree MBA. So we've done some stuff together where we would pitch, you know, to like business plan competitions on different startups. And he's always been very interested in working in that kind of business world too. And so he's trying to do things on the side where we're trying to start things in Asia, you know, in dentistry or refractive surgery. Ooh. And so we always have like bigger dreams, but now it's not out of a need for survival. It's more like to fulfill our own passion and interests. So I definitely think we're both very lucky to be where we are, to be able to do things like that.
Yeah. You know, and that it's so interesting you say that because like, I don't know. I feel like it's not that easy to recognize that, right? To recognize like that, hey, like I've been living my life a certain way in survival mode. And now like I've sort of made it. I feel accomplished. I feel fulfilled. I can take a breather, right? I don't need to keep going. That is a lot of awareness. I don't think people just, so did anything happen that really kind of caused you to identify that and you know, make a shift towards, hey, like we're going to take a breather now, you know?
I was like the first 5 years, we were just hustling. You know, I was working like almost 7 days a week when I started my practice because I was still working like per diem at another practice, like an HMO practice where we were seeing 100 patients a day. And I was still trying to finalize my contract with this practice purchase. And so when I finally started working there, I was still working at the other place because I just felt like I had loans to pay off, like I had skills to gain, like, and I was still young and energetic, like this is the time to do as much as you can, right? And then after 5 years already, which is like a short period of time, you get burned out. And it's like, oh my gosh, how do you keep going like this for another 20 or 30 years? But I think that, you know, after, you know, giving birth to our first son, I think a lot of that puts things into perspective about what's important in life. Step back. Like I had a pretty like rapidly escalating career because I purchased my own practice. I was able to do a lot of things that a lot of my colleagues at my stage weren't able to, you know. I was able to do all the premium IOLs. I was able to buy all the newest, fanciest equipment, right? I didn't need someone else's permission. I didn't need a senior partner to give me the cases that he didn't want, right? So the fact that I purchased a practice from the get-go gave me like a running head start. And then I was able to quickly start, you know, a research infrastructure in my clinic, and I'm doing FDA trials, I was able to speak because of all the technologies I was able to use early on. And so I've gotten to a place where I feel very lucky to be, you know, and I know a lot of, you know, colleagues, you know, who are at my own a similar stage, you know, they might not be in that place. They might be still trying to look for that job that really lets them, you know, enjoy other parts of their life. So I definitely feel very lucky to be at this point. But I think, you know, prioritizing family is one thing that's really important to me and has caused me to kind of slow down and reflect. And I think just taking that risk initially, you know, to have more autonomy, you know, create a situation for yourself where you're the owner, I think that definitely helps a lot in terms of setting your career path. So don't be afraid, you know, you really got to keep your eye open and look for opportunities out there where you can kind of carve your own path. And when you're able to find something that gives you that level of autonomy and control, I think you'll be able to slow down and enjoy more of your life.
Yeah, and that's the word, right? Autonomy. Like, I equate entrepreneurship to freedom, right? That was my kind of entry into it. I mean, there's just nothing else like it. If you want to control your own time, your own schedule, your own destiny, whether, you know, financially or otherwise, I think you just kind of need to do it on your own, you
yeah,
know?
But it's scary, right? There's a lot of risk. And especially being a young surgeon, you're looking at the bills, you're looking at your loans, your mortgage. Like, how do you take that time to start something that's your own when you know there that you could be making more money doing something else, right? Where you might not have as much autonomy, you might be slaving away for a while. But you've got to realize that you're investing for your future goal, right? So you've got to make those sacrifices and that investment in yourself now.
What gave you the confidence? What was your why?
Oh my gosh. So when I graduated from fellowship, I went to Bascom Palmer and I knew I wanted to come back to California because that's where my family was, you know, that's where my husband's family was. It's basically home for us. And I looked at all the jobs available in this market and it was terrible. You know, Southern California is like super saturated and you hear of all these terrible practices where associates are turning around, you know, every year. And there's really no true path to partnership. And so I was really close to just accepting like an academic gig or like a hospital employee gig, you know, just to have that stability. And then really last minute, I came upon this opportunity to buy this practice that was a very successful cataract refractive practice that happened to be in this tiny hometown where I grew up called Roland Heights. Like no one knows where that even is. And the fact that I trained all over the country and then came back here and saw this opportunity where I grew up in the same tiny town. Like, what are the chances?
That's,
and I knew that it was a place that I wanted to be, right? My family was there. I knew the community well. And so it was those factors that made me feel comfortable. Like, yeah, this is somewhere I want to be long-term, you know, no matter what happens, you know, I can at least learn from it. I have my husband supporting me. I have my mom here supporting me. So I'm just going to do it, you know? And so while all my colleagues were getting like guaranteed salaries and like bonuses for moving, I had like no guarantee, you know, as an owner, you don't get a guarantee salary, right? You mm-hmm. basically get what you make. So it was very much a gamble. I even remember my lawyer, I presented him the agreement and he's like, this is crazy. Do you know who your colleagues are signing? Are you sure you want to do this? I'm like, yeah, I think there's a lot of potential here. And I think at least there'll be an opportunity to learn. And I have people supporting me. So yeah, let's go for it. And so that's what I did 6 years ago. And, you know, I'm very lucky that we were able to even grow from there. And so it was just I don't know, the planets and the stars aligned for me. So it's definitely not always that easy. I feel very blessed that it's always a combination of work ethic and I think just opportunity.
That is such a crazy story, you know, and it just tells me like, I mean, you really like, you have to believe in yourself, right? You know how we go to professionals and professionals tell us certain advice and it's like, oh man, they're a professional. We should probably listen to them, right? And you got a lawyer telling you, hey, you know what? Don't do it. And you're like, nah, I'm going to do it anyway. That takes a lot of yeah, just believe in yourself, right? A belief in yourself. Where does that come from?
Yeah, I know. No, honestly, we were pretty terrified because again, we didn't have the funds to buy the practice. I had to like get loans from family, and there was no bank that was willing to finance an agreement like this too, because it wasn't just me buying a practice. I was partnering with a group, like a management company, to do it. So there were really no banks willing to finance either. So literally, I gained the confidence, honestly, from my husband, I think. I think just, everything in this world, you've got to have a partner, in your life, someone who's going to be there to catch you when you
Absolutely.
fall. And he's, to
Absolutely.
be honest, he's the one who's always believed in me more than myself and just had faith in me. And like I said, I've always been the one who's very like, taking the very straight path, very cookie cutter road, do well in academics. And he's always been like more business minded, like think out of the box, and he's like, you can do this. And it was scary because also it's a very unusual practice. I mean, it's a premium practice, and as a trainee, you don't get really any exposure to premium IOLs. It was office-based
Right.
surgery, so you're coming from operating a hospital ASC where there's all these regulations, requirements, and suddenly you're operating in an office where everything's oral sedation. Right. Sometimes you're doing bilateral cataract surgery. So it was a completely new world to me. Lots for me to learn. But I guess I was just confident in what had gotten me there thus far. I felt like I had good training and that whatever new, environments or new cases that I had to learn, I would be able to do that. But and then financially, which was the scariest part, I just felt like, we've already put off our lives for so long and taking loans for so long. This is just
Drop in the
another,
bucket.
yeah, exactly. Which potentially will have a better upside, in a couple of years. So why not? We're already in the hole, right? So
Exactly.
why not just make it another part of our investment? And, my husband was working already full time for a year. So I at least had his salary to kind of rely on. So that was a little bit reassuring. But
Yeah.
yeah, just a lot of, I don't know. I think for me, at least it was familial support and having someone else, have that confidence for you when you yourself might not have that belief.
Yeah. And it's funny, you basically touched on this of like thinking of what have you got to lose, right? You're already in the hole this much. What have you got to lose? And I feel like as immigrants, that is kind of like wired into our mind, right? Because we come here with all these hopes and dreams, like what have you got to lose, right? You come from a worse situation to come to a new situation to try to better your life. What have you got to lose? Let's just take a chance on ourselves, right? I equate a lot of that to, I think, just those immigrant values, you know?
Yeah. Think of our parents and what they had to leave behind, to come to a foreign land and not speak the language. I mean, the risks that they took were way greater than, buying this practice with
100%. 100%, right?
Ivy League degrees. I mean, honestly, there are way scarier things that you would face in life. And I think our parents instill a lot of those values in us in terms of like work ethic, grit, and just taking risks. And then
Yeah.
I just remember like my mom, when she was here in the States with me, and sadly, my dad walked out on us when I was 7 years old. So it's like after all those years of working so hard and us finally feeling like, okay, my dad's getting his degree, he's gonna be able to get a job now, we're finally gonna be able to live like the American dream. And then he walks out, and then my mom was literally on her own, with like a young 7-year-old. And she had the opportunity to take us all back to China because she still had family there. And it was like years later, I asked her, I was like, Mom, why didn't you just take us back? It would have been so much easier than for you to stay here and like struggle on your own. And she said, well, part of it was shame. She didn't want her family to know. And then part of it, she just felt like I would just have better opportunities here. And so she just stayed and hustled her way. And like she, I don't know, she taught herself English just from watching TV, our parents. And then she herself through like accounting classes. after like her waitressing shifts. So she'd just be in school all night. And then she finally got her accounting degree. And so she could stop waitressing and finally get like an office job 9 to 5. And she could spend time with me on weekends. And then she was able to, you know, save up and, you know, invest in IRAs and like 529s. I was like, Mom, how did you even know what any of that stuff was? She's like, I did my research. And so just, you know, just imagine all the challenges that our parents went through. Like, it makes you feel like, oh, you know, what do we have to lose, right? What are these challenges that we have to face? It's nothing compared to our parents.
That is insane. Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine. It's almost comical. It's like, oh yeah, I am afraid of taking a risk on me, even though I have this Ivy League education, like you said, and yet like they came with nothing, right? I mean, theirs was a much, much more, you know, riskier endeavor. Man, that's so interesting. So you had talked about how part of you wanting to buy this practice or business and grow it is that one of your initial jobs, you were told you were kind of judged, right? Or sort of discriminated based on your gender. How much of that fueled you into really just making sure that this was not going to fail, right? This endeavor and this bet on yourself.
I think you don't really know what a disadvantage you're in until you're kind of in the real world. Because I think we're kind of sheltered when we're trainees and residents. You know, everything is pretty diverse. When I was a resident, you know, like our residency class was 5 women, 1 man. And then my cornea refractive fellowship was like 3 girls, 1 guy. And then you see a lot of your female mentors in leadership positions, right? A lot of them were attendings or program directors. And you're like, okay, the real world must be like this, right? Because you already see the improvements start in academia, I feel like. I think they do a better job of, you know, trying to diversify and focusing on a lot of those opportunities, creating equal opportunities. But I think in the real world, we're still playing catch up. And so it was kind of an eye-opener when I started, like, applying for jobs, and you know, all my interviewers were male surgeons, you know, a lot of them older and whiter, white males. And then one of my very first interviews, you know, his first question to me was, so when are you planning to get pregnant? You know, so like right away, it's like, wow, my gender plays a role in my ability. Like, I already have forgotten that I was a woman surgeon. Honestly, in training, it doesn't come up that much. I mean, a lot of, unless you have children in training, that's a whole nother story and another area that we need to improve. But like, for the most part, I felt pretty accepted. But then in the real world, you're realizing that, you know, there's different, you know, stereotypes and different also challenges for women to be practice owners and also surgeons, especially when you're thinking about balancing that with family planning. So, I mean, I don't blame the employers for what they were thinking, because obviously they want someone who's going to be able to work hard and, you know, be productive. But you just naturally come in at a disadvantage because of your gender. And then that just gets like amplified as you continue to practice, especially in refractive surgery, which I feel like is still one of the few subspecialties that are still very male dominated. And so I'm often, you know, in these forums or on these advisory boards, and I'm often like one of the few women, if not the youngest, if not the only one of color, you know, and then you just realize, wow, we still have a long ways to go. And often I feel like I'm contributing things that maybe, you know, I don't know, I feel like I'll say things that I feel like maybe no one's listening. You know, if I don't get a response, I'll think, oh, maybe I said something that was, you know, dumb or, you know, like just not good, just not perceived well. And it really affects your confidence, I think. But then what's interesting is that it doesn't deter me from speaking up. Like, the more I see this, the more I want to contribute. I'm like, we need to have more diversity of opinions here. So, and then I try my best to encourage other, you know, younger surgeons and other women, especially, to speak up as well. And I don't know why I'm the one who feels like I can be vocal about it, because I know a lot of colleagues in my similar situation, they tend to just, you know, back down. But I somehow something has given me thicker skin. Maybe it's our immigrant background again, or maybe it's me being on social media. But I definitely feel like I've gotten a lot thicker skin over the years. And it's very different from where I started. If anyone ever knew me when I was younger, like I was super shy, like never raised my hand, like afraid to speak, which I think a lot of immigrants share because we don't talk around the dinner table at home. And so you feel like you can't relate to your colleagues when they're having conversations about, you know, culture or politics. And so it took a long time for me to come out of my shell. And I'm still finding my voice even to this day.
Are you having those conversations now about culture and politics at the dinner table?
I mean, not a lot. It's not something I love to talk about, but it's nice to be able to, especially with my husband. You know, we have similar upbringings, so we definitely have opinions about things. But it's nice to be able to teach our child, you know, and expose him to those things early on, where I feel like as immigrants, we don't get a lot of those conversations when we're younger, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my household, you know, it's like emotions are not really a thing. We're not going to really express them. We're just going to kind of, you know, put our head down and yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, follow the rules, climb the ladder, become successful. And that's it. And then we're going to die. Like having this like expression of emotions and things like that. Like, you know, I didn't grow up in like a very, you know, touchy feely kind of family. We don't hug or anything like that. And so, yeah, I totally can relate to what you're saying. If that's what you're saying. I don't know if that's what you're saying.
No, that's really such an Asian thing. And I think we're so different now with our child because we like love him all the time. We're like hugging him, always touching him, squeezing him, telling him we love him all the time. And so it's definitely a different way. I think this generation, you know, the second generation is always going to be very different from the first generation. Do you have kids?
No, no kids.
Okay.
So I was 7 when we came here from India. And so we grew up here, right? I grew up here. And how old were you when you came?
I was 3.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. It's been challenging. So I live with my parents currently because I'm
a very common thing in an Asian household. You know, we have to be tight knit.
Yeah. Right. I joked that my therapist told me to explore my inner child, so I'm moving in with my parents. You know, say that again.
Following doctor's orders.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been very interesting. You know, a lot of things are coming up, and it's just I'm in between jobs and things like that, and so kind of a temporary thing for me. But yeah, like just this generational gap, right? Between, you know, my parents and myself, a lot of it is like, you know, they did things because they kind of had to do certain things. It was survival mode. But, you know, I'm sure I'm not unique in this. Like, I kind of, you know, wish things were done a little differently, right, in certain cases. And so you have to kind of go through a process of really moving past those things so that you can, you know, give yourself to some of these other things you want to do, right? Like start your own practice and things like that. Like those things, I think, need to be resolved to some degree. Did you experience any of that?
My mom, I mean, she always just wanted me to be happy. She was like never like a tiger mom. So like everything that I achieved was on my own. It's very different. You know, a lot of Asians, they're like, you need to bring home A+.
Yeah, that was not your case.
It was kind of nice that she didn't put that pressure on me because I was able to find out what I really wanted for myself, and everything that I achieved was because of me. You know, it wasn't trying to meet the expectations of someone else. Like I really entered medicine because I enjoyed it. I wanted to do it, you know, and I think that's not common these days, especially in Asian kind of Asian American households.
Wow. That's interesting to me because I, you know, sometimes I can get kind of in this black and white thinking. I'm like, oh, that's my story. That must be every immigrant story. But that's not the case, right? Everyone has their own story. And so for you, it was more just you realized very early on then that medicine was going to be your career.
Well, not necessarily medicine, but I wanted to do something for myself that I enjoyed. And, you know, doing well in school, it was because I always felt like, hey, I'm pretty good at this. I got straight A's this one quarter. I should try to keep that up, because it was kind of like I wanted to make sure that I lived up to my own potential. You know, like I felt like it would be disappointing if I didn't try my best. Like it was kind of an internal motivation, whereas rather than external. You know, it was like, and that's the other thing. It's like the thing that I'm pretty good about is not comparing myself to others, which is so crazy because I'm on social media. And that's
I
like,
know.
It's like the worst place to be and not compare yourself to others, right? And I think it can create a lot of toxicity. And I think it's part of like a lot of the mental health problems with our youth these days. Like social media is just terrible for that. But I think if you just focus on yourself and, you know, you try your best to just filter out the noise and what everyone else around you is doing, and just, you know, I always made a goal for myself to achieve each of these, you know, dreams, because I wanted to live up to my own potential, not because I wanted to outshine anyone else or because anyone else is doing that. Like I was always my own greatest competition. And that's kind of just how I continue to view the world. Like, I don't really care about what other people are doing. I'm just trying to improve myself and get to the next step for myself.
I'm so intrigued at that because, like you said, yeah, social media, I mean, that is like the place you go to get caught up in this comparison trap, right? And you're arguably, you know, a prominent influencer in that world, but yet you're able to just like maintain that boundary and keep a good distinction between what's real and what's not, you know? And that, again, I want to circle back to this. That takes a lot of self-awareness, right? How do you know yourself that well?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I know what I shouldn't do. I mean, people tend to say that I'm kind of naturally like a very positive person. And I feel like that has its upsides and downsides. Like I will give everyone the benefit of the doubt. And so my husband always says that I get myself in trouble because I get taken advantage of. He always feels like I get taken advantage of. And I say yes to everything or everyone. And I think everyone's always trying to do the best thing, you know? And so I'm not very good at being discerning, which I think can be a disadvantage when you're trying to survive this world. But at the same time, it gives me a lot of internal happiness. I don't know. I just feel like internally, I'm always at a pretty status kind of base level of, you know, satisfaction and contentment with myself. You know, I'm not trying to get material things or like, you know, promotions or other things, you know, material things or external things to fulfill my happiness. You know, I don't know how to explain it. People ask me, I don't know.
I'm completely on board with what you're saying. And it's something that, you know, I aspire to. It's just, but I don't know. Like, I feel like, you know, I'm also kind of hard on myself because I feel like we all have moments of emotional, like, volatility a little bit,
for
right?
Sure.
Life happens, things get in the way. But I think if you have a good, healthy way to regulate such that you have this internal level of peace and contentment at all times, then, I mean, isn't that the goal? Isn't that like success or happiness, fulfillment, whatever you want to call it, is that inner sense of peace, right? And what I'm gathering from you is that it comes from really feeling good about who you are as a person, believing that you are worthy of that, right? That part is so difficult to just really feel and believe, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are things in this world that you can't control. Right. And if you try to control it, that's when you'll start feeling these, you know, episodes of turmoil and internal conflict. So you just have to be good at sort of letting things go and letting things play out and knowing that everything will be okay. And I think it helps, again, to have partnerships and family when you have people to rely on. And you really just have to have that confidence within yourself that if you're doing something scary, you know, it's all going to work out in the end. You're going to learn something from it. Like, it's just somehow about just feeling the positivity and just feeding off of that and just staying away from the negative. Like, if you find yourself comparing, if you find yourself surrounding yourself with people that are negative, you just have to put yourself in a better situation. So you have to make those decisions consciously to, I think, help a place where you can achieve that, you know, baseline level of peace, which I think we're all trying to do in this world.
I read that you and your husband are teaching your son, Atlas, to not be ashamed of his culture, right? Like, if you want others to accept you, then you have to first love and accept yourself. And I just love that like, you're instilling that in, you know, your son at such an early age. Like, that is, you know, that's going to set someone up for the rest of their lives. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we were growing up, I don't know if this was like that for you, but I think a lot of us were ashamed of our culture. You know, you wanted to
Absolutely.
assimilate, right? You wanted to be as Americanized as possible because you didn't want to be different. And so we were sort of ashamed of our parents and our language and our food and our culture. But I feel like this generation and the world we live in now, it's so much more accepting of, you know, diversity. It's something to be celebrated. And so we're definitely exposing our child to that. I mean, for Lunar New Year and all the holidays, like, he gets to see a little bit of everything, you know, Chinese culture, Vietnamese culture, or trying to teach him all the languages. He only knows English very well, but, which is our fault, because grandma just speaks to him in broken English. He's like, oh, please, use Chinese, use Chinese. Yeah, that's important to us, that he understands where he comes from at a very young age and that he celebrates those differences. It's actually better these days to be different than to be all the same, you know, and that's a highlight for him so that he's not ashamed and he will, you know, be who he is to everyone around the world and himself, of course.
I love that. So beautiful. I am very happy for him. He's got great parenting on board. He's going to be just fine. You know, I want to ask you, like, you've obviously, you know, had enormous success such early on too, right? In your career as an ophthalmologist and everything you're doing on social media and your message. I don't know, like, I've been doing like some stand-up comedy recently, just because it helps me stay grounded. And, you know, some jokes don't hit. And it's like, oh, God, get me off of the stage. And then some jokes hit. And the ones that hit, it's like, oh, man, watch out. You know, Chaz the comic, right? Like, it gets your head, right? And you really got to, like, stay humble, because it's an art and it's a process and it's a journey. All the things all the self-help books say, right? So how do you stay humble, right, in the face of your success and recognition? You know, what do you have any, I don't know, what systems do you have in place to, like, make sure that, hey, you know what, like, we're gonna make sure that we're in it for the right reasons and we keep ourselves in check? Because it's hard for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm at the place where I can even, you know, say, okay, it's time to be humble. You've achieved too much, you know? Like, there's still so much that I want to accomplish, right? And there's so many areas where I still feel like I'm not living up to my full potential. And I think just coming from our roots again, you know, being first generation immigrants, we're always going to be tied back to that and where we came from. And so I think humility, at least I hope, will always be a part of us, but it's important for us to not forget where we came from, right? And I think as we continue on in our career and we get further away from where we started, it becomes easier to forget some of those roots. So I think just, you know, staying involved with your community, I think, is helpful too. You know, embracing your culture, mentoring the next generation in your community, I think, keeps you grounded. It's something that I'm already trying to do, even though I'm only a few years out. I have, like, students messaging me through social media. They want to shadow. They want to do research. And I always say yes. Like, no matter how busy I am, I'm like, yes, if you want to come on one Saturday and just join me for an afternoon, come. You know, I know a lot of, you know, doctors, they feel burdened sometimes by students. They feel like, oh, it's just extra work. And I feel that way sometimes too. And then I have to correct myself and I say, hey, you started like that, right? When you were hoping someone would give you a shot and, you know, introduce you to your field, like, you should be doing what you can to give back. And so I do consciously try to make those decisions when it comes to mentorship. And I think that's one thing that definitely helps to keep me grounded. And, you know, you want to try to keep paying it forward. And, you know, I'm just so grateful. Anytime that I, you know, achieve something, the first thing I think about, are my mentors and who did what to help me to get to where I am. So that really should always be your first thought, is like, why did you even get to this point? Who helped you get there? And so you really should take some time to reflect on that and then think of ways to give it back to the next generation who's coming after you. And so it's just a cycle of goodness that we have to fix in order to improve our field for the next generation.
No, I mean, you're right. What you put out in this world, right? The energy you give out is what you're going to get back. I'm a big believer in that. So, and that's inspiring, actually, right? Because I kind of get stuck in that too. It's like, oh gosh, like another med student, and you know, it's gonna slow me down in clinic or whatever, right? But I was absolutely there, right? Just begging for someone to give me that same chance. So that's a great message for all of us. Dr. Zhu, I could talk to you for a long time. I mean, we've been going, and there's still so many questions that I want to ask you, but I want to be respectful of your time. Is there anything parting wise you'd like to talk about or say?
Well, just thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you. I look forward to our course coming up at AO, which we got accepted, right? Which was amazing.
Yes.
That you put that together. It's a topic that we don't necessarily see spoken about at these meetings, but it's about resilience, you know, as an ophthalmologist, and kind of coming from disadvantaged backgrounds and just believing in yourself and finding success and building confidence. So thank you for inviting me to join you on that. I look forward to finally meeting you.
Yeah, no, I'm excited too. And you know, it's really like cultivating resilience, right? Like, and that takes you to recognize the moments in your life where you were resilient. We all have them, right? But we sometimes lose sight of them. And so I we'll talk about this offline too, but I kind of want to use ChatGPT as something to like help people understand examples of resilience from their life, right? It's like a tool for self-awareness. So anyway, I'll run this by you. It's pretty cool. It's worth trying out.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I look forward to it.
For sure. Thank you so much, Dr. Zhu, for joining us today and talking to us about your story. We appreciate it very much. I also want to take a moment to thank our listeners. We appreciate each and every one of you. We can't do what we do without you. So please don't forget to share this podcast if you liked it. And don't forget to write a review on iTunes or Google. Thank you, Dr. Zhu. We'll do it again.
Thank you so much.
Connect with Dr. Chez at visionarydoc.com.